I knew someone else who did that once, said Danny. A man called Arston Whitebeard. Tell me your true names, then.
Gladly. But if we may beg the Queen's indulgence, is there some place with fewer eyes and ears?
Games within games.
As you wish. Scarhaz, clear my court.
The chief-pate roared out orders. His brazen beast did the rest, herding the other Westerosi and the rest of the day's petitioners from the hall. Her counsellors remained.
Now, Danny said, your names.
Handsome young Geralt bowed.
Sir Geras Drinkwater, your grace. My sword is yours.
Greenguts crossed his arms against his chest.
And my warhammer. I am Sir Archibald Ironwood.
And you, sir?
The Queen asked the boy called Frog.
If it please your grace, may I first present my gift?
If you wish,
Daenerys said, curious. But as Frog started forward, Dario Naharis stepped in front of him and held out a gloved hand.
Give this gift to me.
Stone-faced, the stocky lad bent, unlaced his boot, and drew a yellowed parchment from a hidden flap within.
This is your gift? A scrap of writing?
Dario snatched the parchment out of the Dornishman's hands and unrolled it, squinting at the seals and signatures.
Very pretty, all the golden ribbons, but I do not read your Westerosi scratchings.
Bring it to the Queen, Sir Barristan commanded. Now! Danny could feel the anger in the hall.
I'm only a young girl, and young girls must have their gifts, she said lightly. Dario, please, you must not tease me. Give it here.
The parchment was written in the common tongue. The Queen unrolled it slowly, studying the seals and signatures. When she saw the name Sir Willem Darry, her heart beat a little faster. She read it over once, and then again.
May we know what it says, Your Grace?
Asked Sir Barristan.
It is a secret pact, Danny said, made in Braavos when I was just a little girl. Sir William Darry, the man who spirited my brother and me away from Dragonstone before the usurper's men could take us, signed for us. Prince Oberyn Martell signed for Dorne, and the Sea Lord of Braavos was witness.
She handed the parchment to Sir Barristan, so he might read it for himself.
The alliance is to be sealed by a marriage, it says, in return for Dorne's help overthrowing the usurper. My brother Viserys is to take Prince Doran's daughter Arianne for his queen.
The old knight read the pact slowly.
If Robert had known of this, he would have smashed Sunspear as he once smashed Pike,
and claimed the heads of Prince Doran and the Red Viper, and, like as not, the head of this Dornish princess, too.
No doubt that was why Prince Doran chose to keep the pact a secret, suggested Daenerys. If my brother Viserys had known that he had a Dornish princess waiting for him, he would have crossed a Sunspear as soon as he was old enough to wed, and thereby brought Robert's warhammer down upon himself and Dorne as well, said Frog. My father was content to wait for the day that Prince Viserys found his army. Your father, Prince Doran.
He sank back onto one knee.
Your Grace, I have the honour to be Quentin Martell, a Prince of Dorne, and your most leal subject.
Danny laughed. The Dornish prince flushed red, whilst her own court and councillors gave her puzzled looks.
Radiance, said Scarhaz Shavepate, in the Gascari tongue. Why'd you laugh?
They call him Frog, she said, and we've just learned why. In the Seven Kingdoms there are children's tales of frogs who turn into enchanted princes when kissed by their true love.
Smiling at the Dornish knights, she switched back to the common tongue.
Tell me, Prince Quentin, are you enchanted?
no, Your Grace.
I feared as much. Neither enchanted nor enchanting, alas. A pity he's the prince, and not the one with the wide shoulders and the sandy hair. You have come for a kiss, however. You mean to marry me. Is that the way of it? The gift you bring me is your own sweet self. Instead of a series and your sister, you and I must seal this pact, if I want Dawn.
My father hoped that you might find me acceptable. Dario Naharis gave a scornful laugh. I say you are a pup. The queen needs a man beside her, not a mewling boy. You are no fit husband for a woman such as her. When you lick your lips, do you still taste your mother's milk?
Sir Gareth Drinkwater darkened at his words.
Mind your tongue, Sellsword. You're speaking to a prince of Dawn.
And to his wet nurse, I am thinking.
Dario brushed his thumbs across his sword hilts and smiled dangerously. Skalhar scowled, as only he could scowl.
This boy might serve for Dawn, but Meereen needs a king of Gascari blood.
I know of this Dawn, said Resnick Mo Resnick. Dawn is sand and scorpions, and bleak red mountains baking in the sun.
Prince Quentin answered him.
Dawn is 50,000 spears and swords, pledged to our queen's service.
50,000, mocked Daria. I count three.
Enough,
Daenerys said.
Prince Quentin has crossed half the world to offer me his gift. I will not have him treated with discourtesy.
She turned to the Dornishman.
Would that you had come a year ago. I am pledged to wed the noble Histar Zolorek.
Sir Gareth said, It is not too late.
I will be the judge of that,
Daenerys said.
Resnick, see that the prince and his companions are given quarters suitable to their high birth, and that their wants are attended to.
As you wish, your radiance.
The queen rose.
Then we are done for now.
Dario and Sir Barristan followed her up the steps to her apartments.
This changes everything, the old knight said.
This changes nothing, Danny said, as he removed her crown. What good are three men?
Three knights, said Selmy.
Three layers, Dario said darkly. They deceive me.
And bought you too, I do not doubt.
He did not trouble to deny it. Danny unrolled the parchment and examined it again.
Braavos. This was done in Braavos, while we were living in the house with the red door.
Why did that make her feel so strange? She found herself remembering her nightmare.
Sometimes there is truth in dreams.
Could Histar Zolorek be working for the warlocks? Was that what the dream had meant? Could the dream have been ascending? Were the gods telling her to put Histar aside and wed this Dornish prince instead? Something tickled at her memory.
Sir Barristan, what are the arms of House Martell?
A sun in splendor, transfixed by a spear.
The sun's sun. A shiver went through her. Shadows and whispers. What else? Had Quaes said. The pale mare and the sun's sun. There was a lion in it, too, and a dragon. Or am I the dragon? Beware the perfume seneschal.
That she remembered.
Dreams and prophecies. Why must they always be in riddles? I hate this. Oh, leave me, sir. Tomorrow is my wedding day.
That night Dario had her every way a man could have a woman, and she gave herself to him willingly. The last time, as the sun was coming up, she used her mouth to make him hard again, as Dario had taught her long ago. Then rode him so wildly that his wound began to bleed again, and for one sweet heartbeat she could not tell whether he was inside her or she inside him. But when the sun rose upon her wedding day, so did Dario Naharis, donning his clothes and buckling on his sword belt with its gleaming golden wantons.
"Where are you going?"
Danny asked him.
"I forbid you to make a sortie today."
"My queen is cruel," her captain said. "If I cannot slay your foes, how shall I amuse myself whilst you are being wed?"
"By nightfall, I shall have no foes."
"It is only dawn, sweet queen.
The day is long. Time enough for one last sortie. I will bring you back the head of Brown Ben Plum for a wedding gift."
"No heads," Danny insisted. "Once you brought me flowers."
"Let Histar bring you flowers. He's not one to stoop and pluck a dandelion, true, but he has servants who will be pleased to do it for him. Do I have your leave to go?"
"No."
She wanted him to stay and hold her.
"One day he will go and not return," she thought. "One day some archer will put an arrow through his chest, or 10 men will fall on him with spears and swords and axes. 10 would-be heroes."
5 of them would die, but that would not make her grief easier to bear.
"One day I will lose him, as I lost my sun and stars. But please, gods, not today. Come back to bed and kiss me."
No one had ever kissed her like Dario Naharis.
"I am your queen, and I command you to fuck me."
She had meant it playfully, but Dario's eyes hardened at her words. "Fucking queens is king's work. Your noble Histar can attend to that once you're wed. And if he proves to be too high-born for such sweaty work, he has servants who will be pleased to do that for him as well. Or perhaps you can call the Dornish boy into your bed, and his pretty friend as well. Why not?" He strode from the bedchamber.
"He's going to make a sortie," Danny realized, "and if he takes Ben Plum's head, he'll walk into the wedding feast and throw it at my feet. 7 saved me. Why couldn't he be better born?"
When he was gone, Missandei brought the queen a simple meal of goat cheese and olives, with raisins for a sweet.
"Your grace needs more than wine to break her fast. You are such a tiny thing, and you will surely need your strength today."
That made Daenerys laugh, coming from a girl so small. She relied so much on the little scribe that she oft forgot that Missandei had only turned 11. They shared the food together on her terrace. As Danny nibbled on an olive, the Naarthi girl gazed at her with eyes like molten gold and said,
"It is not too late to tell him that you have decided not to wed."
"It is, though," the queen thought sadly. "Histar's blood is ancient and noble. Our joining will join my freedmen to his people. When we become as one, so will our city."
"Your grace does not love the noble Histar. This one thinks you would sooner have another for your husband." "I must not think of Dario today. A queen loves where she must, not where she will."
Her appetite had left her.
"Take this food away," she told Missandei. "It's time I bathed."
Afterward, as Jiqui was patting Daenerys dry, Eri approached with her toka. Danny envied the Dothraki maids their loose sand-silk trousers and painted vests. They would be much cooler than her in her toka, with its heavy fringe of baby pearls.
"Help me wind this round myself, please. I cannot manage all these pearls by myself."
She should be eager with anticipation for her wedding and the night that would follow, she knew. She remembered the night of her first wedding, when Khal Drogo had claimed her maidenhead beneath the stranger stars. She remembered how frightened she had been and how excited. Would it be the same with Histar?
"No. I am not the girl I was.
and he is not my son and stars. Missandei reemerged from inside the pyramid.
Resnek and Skahaz beg the honor of escorting your grace to the Temple of the Graces. Resnek has ordered your palanquin made ready.
Myrinese seldom rode within their city walls. They preferred palanquins, litters, and sedan chairs, borne upon the shoulders of their slaves. "Horses befoul the streets," one man of Zak had told her. "Slaves do not." Danny had freed the slaves, yet palanquins, litters, and sedan chairs still choked the streets as before, and none of them floated magically through the air.
"The day is too hot to be shut up in a palanquin," said Danny. "Have my silver saddled. I would not go to my lord husband upon the backs of bearers."
"Your grace," said Missandei,
"this one is so sorry, but you cannot ride in a tokar."
The little scribe was right, as she so often was. The tokar was not a garment meant for horseback. Danny made a face.
"As you say, not the palanquin, though. I would suffocate behind those drapes. Have them ready a sedan chair."
If she must wear her floppy ears, let all the rabbits see her. When Danny made her descent, Resnek and Skahaz dropped to their knees.
"Your worship shines so brightly, you will blind every man who dares to look upon you," said Resnek.
The seneschal wore a tokar of maroon samite with golden fringes.
"Hisda Zolaric is most fortunate in you, and you in him, if I may be so bold as to say. This match will save our city. You will see."
"So we pray. I want to plant my olive trees and see them fruit. Does it matter that Hisdar's kisses do not please me? Peace will please me. Am I a queen or just a woman?"
"The crowds will be thick as flies today."
The shavepate was clad in a pleated black skirt and a muscled breastplate, with a brazen helm shaped like a serpent's head beneath one arm.
"Should I be afraid of flays? Your brazen beasts will keep me safe from any harm."
It was always dusk inside the base of the Great Pyramid. Walls 30 feet thick muffled the tumult of the streets and kept the heat outside, so it was cool and dim within. Her escort was forming up inside the gates. Horses, mules, and donkeys were stabled in the western walls, elephants in the eastern. Danny had acquired 3 of those huge, queer beasts with her pyramid. They reminded her of hairless gray mammoths, though their tusks had been barbed and gilded, and their eyes were sad. She found Strong Belwas eating grapes, as Barristan Selmy watched the stable boy cinch the girth on his dapple grey. The 3 Dornishmen were with him, talking, but they broke off when the queen appeared. Their prince went to one knee.
"Your grace, I must entreat you. My father's strength is failing, but his devotion to your cause is as strong as ever. If my manner or my person have displeased you, that is my sorrow, but if you would please me, sir, be happy for me," Daenerys said. "This is my wedding day. They will be dancing in the Yellow City, I do not doubt." She sighed. "Rise, my prince, and smile. One day I shall return to Westeros to claim my father's throne and look to Dorne for help. But on this day the Yunkai have my city ringed in steel. I may die before I see my 7 kingdoms. Hisdar may die. Westeros may be swallowed by the waves." Danny kissed his cheek. "Come, it's time I wed."
Sir Barristan helped her up onto her sedan chair. Quentin rejoined his fellow Dornishmen. Strong Belwas bellowed for the gates to be opened, and Daenerys Targaryen was carried forth into the sun. Selmy fell in beside her on his dapple grey.
"Tell me,"
Danny said, as the procession turned toward the Temple of the Graces.
"If my father and my mother had been free to follow their own hearts, whom would they have wed?"
"It was long ago. Your Grace would not know them."
"You know, though. Tell me."
The old knight inclined his head. "The Queen, your mother, was always mindful of her duty. He was handsome in his gold and silver armor, his white cloak streaming from his shoulders, but he sounded like a man in pain, as if every word were a stone he had to pass. As a girl, though, she was once smitten with a young knight from the Stormlands who wore her favor at a tourney and named her Queen of Love and Beauty. A brief thing."
"What happened to this knight?"
"He put away his lance the day your lady mother wed your father. Afterward, he became most pious, and was heard to say that only the maiden could replace Queen Rhaella in his heart. His passion was impossible, of course. A landed knight is no fit consort for a princess of royal blood."
"And Dario Naharis is only a sellsword, not fit to buckle on the golden spurs of even a landed knight. And my father, was there some woman that he loved better than his queen?"
Sir Barristan shifted in the saddle.
Not loved.
Mayhaps wanted is a better word, but it was only kitchen gossip, the whispers of washerwomen and stable boys. I want to know. I never knew my father. I want to know everything about him, the good and the rest."
"As you command." The White Knight chose his words with care.
"Prince Ares, as a youth, he was taken with a certain lady of Castle Rock, a cousin of Tywin Lannister. When she and Tywin wed, your father drank too much wine at the wedding feast, and was heard to say that it was a great pity that the Lord's right to the first knight had been abolished. A drunken jape, no more. But Tywin Lannister was not a man to forget such words, or the liberties your father took during the bedding."
His face reddened.
"I have said too much, your Grace. Gracious Queen, well met."
Another procession had come up beside her own, and Hisdar Zolorath was smiling at her from his own sedan chair.
"My king."
Danny wondered where Dario Naharis was, what he was doing.
"If this was a story, he would gallop up just as we reached the temple to challenge Hisdar for my hand."
Side by side, the queen's procession and Hisdar Zolorek's made their slow way across Meereen, until finally the Temple of the Graces loomed up before them, its golden domes flashing in the sun.
"How beautiful,"
the queen tried to tell herself. But inside her was some foolish little girl who could not help but look about for Dario.
"If he loved you, he would come and carry you off at Swordpoint, as Rhaegar carried off his northern girl,"
the girl in her insisted. But the queen knew that was folly. Even if her captain was mad enough to attempt it, the brazen beasts would cut him down before he got within 100 yards of her. Galazi Galari awaited them outside the temple doors. Surrounded by her sisters in white and pink and red, blue and gold and purple.
"There are fewer than there were."
Danny looked for Azara and did not see her.
"Has the bloody flux taken even her?"
Though the queen had let the Astapori starve outside her walls to keep the bloody flux from spreading, it was spreading nonetheless. Many had been stricken, freedmen, sellswords, brazen beasts even Dothraki, though as yet none of the unsullied had been touched. She prayed the worst was past. The Graces brought forth an ivory chair and a golden bowl. Holding her tokar daintily, so as not to tread upon its fringes, Daenerys Targaryen eased herself onto the chair's plush velvet seat, and Hisdar Zolorek went to his knees, unlaced her sandals, and washed her feet, whilst 50 eunuchs sang, and 10,000 eyes looked on.
"He has gentle hands," she mused, as warm, fragrant oils ran between her toes. "If he has a gentle heart as well, I may grow fond of him, in time."
When her feet were clean, Hisdar dried them with a soft towel, laced her sandals on again, and helped her stand. Hand in hand, they followed the Green Grace inside the temple, where the air was thick with incense, and the guards of Gis stood cloaked in shadows in their alcoves. 4 hours later, they emerged again as man and wife, bound together wrist and ankle with chains of yellow gold. John. Queen Selyse descended upon Castle Black with her daughter and her daughter's fool, her serving girls and lady companions, and a retinue of knights, sworn swords, and men-at-arms 50 strong. Queen's men all, Jon Snow knew. They may attend Selyse, but it is Melisandre they serve. The Red Priestess had warned him of their coming, almost a day before the Raven arrived from Eastwatch with the same message. He met the Queen's party by the stables, accompanied by Satin, Bowen Marsh, and half a dozen guards in long black cloaks. It would never do to come before this queen without a retinue of his own, if half of what they said of her was true. She might mistake him for a stable boy and hand him the reins of her horse. The Snows had finally moved off to the south and given them a respite. There was even a hint of warmth in the air as Jon Snow took a knee before the southern queen. "Your Grace, Castle Black welcomes you and yours." Queen Selyse looked down at him.
"My thanks. Please escort me to your Lord Commander."
"My brothers chose me for that honour. I am Jon Snow."
"You? They said you were young, but—"
Queen Selyse's face was pinched and pale. She wore a crown of red gold with points in the shape of flames, a twin to that worn by Stannis.
"You may rise, Lord Snow. This is my daughter, Shireen."
"Princess," John inclined his head. Shireen was a homely child, made even uglier by the grey scale that had left her neck and part of her cheek stiff and grey and cracked. "My brothers and I are at your service," he told the girl. Shireen reddened.
"Thank you, my lord. I believe you are acquainted with my kinsman, Sir Axel Florent,"
the queen went on. "Only by raven and report. The letters he'd received from Eastwatch by the Sea had a deal to say about Axel Florent. Very little of it good. Sir Axel?" "Lord Snow." A stout man. Florent had short legs and a thick chest. Coarse hair covered his cheeks and jowls, and poked from his ears and nostrils.
"My loyal knights," Queen Selyse went on. "Sir Narbot, Sir Benethan, Sir Bruss, Sir Patrick, Sir Dordan, Sir Malagorn, Sir Lambert, Sir Perkin."
Each worthy bowed in turn. She did not trouble to name her fool, but the cowbells on his antlered hat and the motley tattooed across his puffy cheeks made him hard to overlook. Patchface. Cotterpike's letters had made mention of him as well. Pike claimed he was a simpleton. Then the queen beckoned to another curious member of her entourage, a tall, gaunt stick of a man, his height accentuated by an outlandish three-tiered hat of purple felt. And here we have the Honourable Tycho Nestoris, an emissary of the Iron Bank of Braavos, come to treat with His Grace King Stannis.
The banker doffed his hat and made a sweeping bow.
Lord Commander, I thank you and your brothers for your hospitality.
He spoke the common tongue flawlessly, with only the slightest hint of accent. Half a foot taller than John, the Braavosi sported a beard, as thin as a rope sprouting from his chin and reaching almost to his waist. His robes were a somber purple, trimmed with ermine. A high stiff collar framed his narrow face.
I hope we shall not inconvenience you too greatly.
Not at all, my lord. You are most welcome. More welcome than this queen, if truth be told.
Cotter Pike had sent a raven ahead to advise them of the banker's coming. John Snow had thought of little since. John turned back to the queen.
The royal chambers in the King's Tower have been prepared for your grace, for so long as you wish to remain with us. This is our Lord Steward, Bowen Marsh. He will find quarters for your men.
How kind of you to make room for us.
The Queen's words were courteous enough, though her tone said,
It is no more than your duty, and you best hope these quarters please me. We will not be with you long, a few days at the best. It is our intent to press on to our new seat at the Night Fort, as soon as we are rested. The journey from Eastwatch was wearisome.
As you say, Your Grace, said John.
You will be cold and hungry, I'm sure. A hot meal awaits you in our common room. Very good.
The Queen glanced about the yard.
First, though, we wish to consult with the Lady Melisandre.
Of course, Your Grace. Her apartments are in the King's Tower as well. This way, if you will.
Queen Selyse nodded, took her daughter by the hand, and permitted him to lead them from the stables. Sir Axel, the Braavosi banker, and the rest of her party followed, like so many ducklings, done up in wool and fur.
Your Grace, said John Snow, my builders have done all they can to make the Night Fort ready to receive you, yet much of it remains in ruins. It is a large castle, the largest on the wall, and we have only been able to restore a part of it. You might be more comfortable back at Eastwatch by the sea.
Queen Selyse sniffed.
We are done with Eastwatch. We did not like it there. A queen should be mistress beneath her own roof. We found your Cotter Pike to be an uncouth and unpleasant man, quarrelsome and niggardly.
You should hear what Cotter says of you.
Oh, I'm sorry for that, but I fear Your Grace will find conditions at the Night Fort even less to your liking. We speak of a fortress, not a palace, a grim place and cold, whereas
Eastwatch is not safe.
The Queen put a hand on her daughter's shoulder.
This is the King's true heir. Shireen will one day sit the Iron Throne and rule the Seven Kingdoms. She must be kept from harm, and Eastwatch is where the attack will come. This Night Fort is the place my husband has chosen for our seat, and there we shall abide.
An enormous shadow emerged from behind the shell of the Lord Commander's tower. Princess Shireen gave a shriek, and three of the Queen's knights gasped in harmony. Another swore.
Seven save us, he said,
quite forgetting his new red guard in his shock.
Don't be afraid, John told them. There's no harm in him, Your Grace. This is 1-1.
One-way, one-door-one.
The Joyn's voice rumbled like a boulder crashing down the mountainside. He sank to his knees before them. Even kneeling, he loomed over them.
Kneel, Queen, little Queen.
Words that Leathers had taught him, no doubt. Princess Shireen's eyes went wide as dinner plates.
He's a giant, a real true giant, like from the stories, but why does he talk so funny?
"'He only knows a few words of the common tongue as yet,' said John. "'In their own land, giants speak the old tongue.'
"'Cannot touch him.'
"'Best not,' her mother warned. "'Look at him. A filthy creature.' The queen turned her frown on John. "'Lord Snow, what is this bestial creature doing on our side of the wall?'
"'Wan-Wan is a guest of the Night's Watch, as you are.' The queen did not like that answer, nor did her knights. Sir Axel grimaced in disgust. Sir Brass gave him a nervous titter. Sir Narbit said, "'I had been told all the giants were dead.'
"'Almost all.' Ygritte wept for them.
"'In the dark, the dead are dancing.'
Patchface shuffled his feet in a grotesque dance step.
I know, ho, ho, ho!'
At Eastwatch, someone had sewn him a motley cloak of beaver pelts, sheepskins, and rabbit fur. His hat sported antlers hung with bells, and long brown flaps of squirrel fur that hung down over his ears. Every step he took set him to ringing. Wan-Wan gaped at him with fascination. But when the giant reached for him, the fool hopped back away, jingling.
"'Oh, no! Oh, no! Oh, no!'
That brought Wan-Wan lurching to his feet. The queen grabbed hold of Princess Shireen and pulled her back. Her knights reached for their swords, and Patchface reeled away in alarm, lost his footing, and plopped down on his arse in a snowdrift. Wan-Wan began to laugh. A giant's laughter could put to shame a dragon's roar. Patchface covered his ears. Princess Shireen pressed her face into her mother's furs, and the boldest of the queen's knights moved forward, steel in hand. John raised an arm to block his path. "'You do not want to anger him. Sheathe your steel, sir. Leathers, take Wan-Wan back to Hardin's.'
"'Eat now, Wan-Wan?'
asked the giant. "'Eat now,' John agreed. To Leathers he said, "'I'll send out a bushel of vegetables for him and meat for you. Start a fire.' Leathers grinned.
"'I will, my lord, but Hardin's is bone cold. Perhaps, my lord, could send out some wine to warm us?'
"'For you, not him.' Wan-Wan had never tasted wine until he came to Castle Black, but once he had, he'd taken a gigantic liking to it. Too much of a liking. John had enough to contend with just now, without adding a drunken giant to the mix. He turned back to the Queen's knights. "'My lord father used to say, a man should never draw his sword unless he means to use it.'
"'Using it was my intent.'
The knight was clean-shaven and wind-burnt. Beneath a cloak of white fur, he wore a cloth of silver surcoat, emblazoned with a five-pointed blue star.
"'I had been given to understand that the Night's Watch defended the realm against such monsters. No one mentioned keeping them as pets.'
"'Another bloody Southron fool.
You are?'
"'Sir Patrick of King's Mountain.' "'If it please, my lord.'
"'I do not know how you observe guest right on your mountain, sir. In the north we hold it sacred. Wan-Wan is a guest here.'
Sir Patrick smiled.
"'Tell me, Lord Commander, should the others turn up, do you plan to offer hospitality to them as well?'
The knight turned to his queen.
"'Your Grace, that is the King's Tower there, if I am not mistaken.' If I may have the honour?
As you wish.
The queen took his arm and swept past the men of the Night's Watch with never a second glance. Those flames on her crown are the warmest thing about her.
Lord Tycoon, John called. A moment, please.
The bravassi halted.
No, Lord, I only a simple servant of the Anna Bank Bravas.
Cut a pike. "'Informs me that you came to Eastwatch with three ships, a galleus, a galley, and a cog.
"'Just so, my lord, the crossing can be perilous in this season. "'One ship alone may founder, where three together may aid one another. The Arna Bank is always prudent in such matters. Perhaps before you leave, we might have a quiet word.
I am at your service, Lord Commander. And in Bravos, we say there is no time like the present. Will that suit?
As good as any. Shall we repair to my solar, or would you like to see the top of the wall? The banker glanced up to where the ice loomed vast and pale against the sky.
I fear it will be bitter cold up top.
That and window, you learn to walk well away from the edge. Men have been blown off, still. The wall is like nothing else on earth. You may never have another chance to see it.
No doubt I shall rue my caution upon my deathbed. But after a long day in the saddle, a warm room sounds preferable to me.
My solar, then. Satin, some mulled wine, if you would. John's rooms behind the armory were quiet enough, if not especially warm. His fire had gone out some time ago. Satin was not as diligent in feeding it as Dolorous Ed had been. Mormont's raven greeted them with a shriek of, "Corn!" John hung up his cloak. "You come seeking Stannis. Is that correct?"
"It is, my lord. Queen Selys has suggested that we might send word to Deepwood Mott by raven to inform his grace that I await his pleasure at the nightfall. The matter that I mean to put to him is too delicate to entrust to letters."
A debt? What else could it be? His own debt, or his brother's? The banker pressed his fingers together.
"It would not be proper for me to discuss Lord Stannis's indebtedness or lack of same. As to King Robert, it was indeed our pleasure to assist his grace in his need. For so long as Robert lived, all was well. Now, however, the Iron Throne has ceased all repayment."
Could the Lannisters truly be so foolish? You cannot mean to hold Stannis responsible for his brother's debts.
"The debts belong to the Iron Throne," Tycho declared, "and whosoever sits that chair must pay them. Since a young King Tommen and his counselors have become so obdurate, we mean to broach the subject with King Stannis. Should he prove himself more worthy of our trust, it would, of course, be a great pleasure to lend him whatever help he needs."
"Help!"
the raven screamed.
"Help! Help! Help!"
Much of this John had surmised the moment he learned that the Iron Bank had sent an envoy to the wall. When last we heard, his grace was marching on Winterfell to confront Lord Bolton and his allies. You may seek him there if you wish, though that carries a risk. You could find yourself caught up in his war. Tycho bowed his head.
"We who serve the Iron Bank face death full as often as you who serve the Iron Throne."
"Is that whom I serve?" Jon Snow was no longer certain. "I can provide you with horses, provisions, guides, whatever is required to get you as far as Deepwood Mott. From there you will need to make your own way to Stannis, and you may well find his head upon a spike. There will be a price."
"Price!"
screamed Mormont's raven.
"Price! Price!"
"There is always a price, is there not?"
The Bravasi smiled.
"What does this watch require?"
"Your ships, for a start, with their crews."
"All the three? How will I return to Bravos?"
"I only need them for a single voyage."
"A hazardous voyage, I assume. For a start, you said?"
"We need a loan as well, gold enough to keep us fed till spring, to buy food and hire ships to bring it to us."
"Spring? Oh," Tycho sighed. "It is not possible, my lord."
What was it Stannis had said to him? "You haggle like a crone with a codfish, Lord Snow."
Did Lord Eddard father you on a fishwife?
Perhaps he had at that.
It took the better part of an hour before the impossible became possible, and another hour before they could agree on terms. The flagon of mulled wine that Saturn delivered helped them settle the more nettlesome points. By the time Jon Snow signed the parchment the Bravassi drew up, both of them were half-drunk and quite unhappy. Jon thought that a good sign. The three Bravassi ships would bring the fleet at Eastwatch up to 11, including the Ibanez whaler that Cutter Pike had commanded on Jon's orders, a trading galley out of Pentos, similarly impressed, and three battered Lycene warships, remnants of Salador Sand's former fleet, driven back north by the autumn storms. All three of San's ships had been in dire need of refitting, but by now the work should be complete. 11 ships was no wise enough, but if he waited any longer, the free folk at Hardhome would be dead by the time the rescue fleet arrived. Sail now, or not at all. Whether Mother Mole and her people would be desperate enough to entrust their lives to Night's Watch, though. The day had darkened by the time he and Tycho Nestoris left the Solar. Snow had begun to fall. Our respite was a brief one, it would seem. Jon drew his cloak about himself more tightly.
"Winter is nigh upon us. The day I left Bravas, there was ice on the canals."
"Three of my men passed through Bravas not long ago," Jon told him. "An old maester, a singer, and a young steward. They were escorting a wildling girl and her child to Old Town. I do not suppose you chanced to encounter them."
"I fear not, my lord. Westerosi pass through Bravas every day, but most come and go from the Ragman's Harbor. The ships of the Iron Bank moor at the Purple Harbor. If you wish, I can make inquiries after them when I return home."
"No need. By now they should be safe in Old Town."
"Let us hope, Pato. The narrow sea is perilous this time of year, and of late there have been troubling reports of strange ships seen amongst the stepstones."
"Salador-san?"
"The Lassine pirate. Some say he has returned to his old haunts. This is so. And Lord Redwine's war fleet creeps through the broken arm as well. On its way home, no doubt. But these men and their ships are well known to us. No, these other sails from further east, perhaps. One hears queer talk of dragons."
"Would that we had one here. A dragon might warm things up a bit."
"Oh, my lord jests. You will forgive me if I do not laugh. We, Bravassi, are descended from those who fled Valyria and the wrath of its dragon lords. We do not jape of dragons."
"No, I suppose not.
My apologies, Lord Tycho. None is required, Lord Commander. Now, I find that I am hungry. Lending such large sums of gold will give a man an appetite. Will you be so good as to point me to your feast hall?"
"I will take you there myself," Jon gestured. "This way." Once there, it would have been discourteous not to break bread with a banker, so Jon sent Saturn off to fetch some food. The novelty of newcomers had brought out almost all the men who were not on duty or asleep, so the cellar was crowded and warm. The Queen herself was absent, as was her daughter. By now, presumably, they were settling into the King's Tower. But Sir Brass and Sir Malagorn were on hand, entertaining such brothers as had gathered with the latest tidings from East Watch and beyond the sea. Three of the Queen's ladies sat together, attended by their serving maids and a dozen admiring men of the Night's Watch. Nearer the door, the Queen's hand was attacking a brace of capons, sucking the meat off the bones, and washing down each bite with ale. When he espied Jon Snow, Axel Florent tossed a bone aside,
wiped his mouth with the back of his hand, and sauntered over. With his bowed legs, barrel chest, and prominent ears, he presented a comical appearance, but John knew better than to laugh at him. He was an uncle to Queen Selyse, and had been among the first to follow her in accepting Melisandre's red god. If he is not a Kinslayer, he's the next best thing. Axel Florent's brother had been burned by Melisandre, Maester Aemon had informed him. Yet Sir Axel had done little and less to stop it. What sort of man can stand by idly and watch his own brother being burnt alive?
"Nestoris," said Sir Axel, "and the Lord Commander. Might I join you?"
He lowered himself to the bench before they could reply.
"Lord Snow, if I may ask, this wildling princess His Grace King Stannis wrote of, where might she be, my lord?"
"Long leagues from here," John thought. "If the guards are good by now, she has found Tormund Giantsbane. Val is the younger sister of Dala, who was Mance Raider's wife and mother to his son. King Stannis took Val and the child captive after Dala died in childbed. But she is no princess, not as you mean it." Sir Axel shrugged.
"Whatever she may be, at Eastwatch, men claimed the wench was fair. I like to see with mine own eyes. Some of these wildling women, well, a man would need to turn them over to do his duty as a husband. If it please the Lord Commander, bring her out. Let us have a look."
"She is not a horse to be paraded for inspection, sir."
"I promise not to count her teeth."
Florent grinned.
"Oh, never fear. I'll treat her with all the courtesy she is due."
"He knows I do not have her.
A village has no secrets, and no more did Castle Black." Val's absence was not spoken of openly, but some men knew, and in the common hall at night the brothers talked.
What has he heard? John wondered. How much does he believe?
Forgive me, sir, but Val will not be joining us. I'll go to her. Where'd you keep the wench?
Away from you. Somewhere safe. Enough, sir. The knight's face grew flushed.
My lord, have you forgotten who I am?
His breath smelled of ale and onions.
Must I speak to the queen?
Oh, a word from her grace, and I can have this wildling girl delivered naked to the hall for our inspection. That would be a pretty trick, even for a queen. The queen would never presume upon our hospitality, John said, hoping that was true. Now I fear I must take my leave before I forget the duties of a host. Lord Tycho, pray excuse me.
Yes, of course,
the baker said.
A pleasure.
Outside, the snow was coming down more heavily. Across the yard, the king's tower had turned into a hulking shadow, the lights in its windows obscured by falling snow. Back in his solar, John found the old bear's raven perched on the back of the oak and leather chair behind the trestle table. The bird began to scream for food the moment he entered. John took a fistful of dried kernels from the sack by the door and scattered them on the floor, then claimed the chair. Tycho Nestoris had left behind a copy of their agreement. John read it over thrice. Now that was simple, he reflected, simpler than I dared hope, simpler than it should have been. It gave him an uneasy feeling. Bravassi coin would allow the Night's Watch to buy food from the south when their own stores ran short, food enough to see them through the winter, however long it might prove to be. A long, hard winter will leave the watch so deep in debt that we will never climb out, John reminded himself. But when the choice is debt or death, best borrow. He did not have to like it, though. And come spring, when the time came to repay all that gold, he would like it even less. Tycho Nestoris had impressed him as cultured and courteous, but the Iron Bank of Braavos had a fearsome reputation when collecting debts. Each of the nine free cities had its bank, and some had more than one, fighting over every coin like dogs over a bone. But the Iron Bank was richer and more powerful than all the rest combined. When princes defaulted on their debts to lesser banks, ruined bankers sold their wives and children into slavery and opened their own veins. When princes failed to repay the Iron Bank, new princes sprang up from nowhere and took their thrones, as poor plump Tommen may be about to learn. No doubt the Lannisters had good reason for refusing to honour King Robert's debts, but it was folly all the same. If Stannis was not too stiff-necked to accept their terms, the Bravosi would give him all the gold and silver he required, coin enough to buy a dozen sellsword companies, to bribe 100 lords, to keep his men paid, fed, clothed, and armed. Unless Stannis is lying dead beneath the walls of Winterfell, he may just have won the Iron Throne. He wondered if Melisandre had seen that in her fires. John sat back, yawned, stretched. On the morrow he would draft orders for Cutter Pike. 11 ships to Hardhome, bring back as many as you can, women and children first. It was time they set sail. Should I go myself, though, or leave it to Cotter? The old bear had led arranging. Aye, and never returned. John closed his eyes, just for a moment, and woke, stiff as a board, with the old bear's raven muttering,
"Snow! Snow!"
and Molly shaking him.
"My lord, you're wanted. Beg pardon, my lord, a girl's been found."
"A girl?" John sat, rubbing the sleep from his eyes with the back of his hands.
"Val? Has Val returned?"
"Not Val, my lord. This side of the wall it were."
"Arya?" John straightened. "It had to be her."
"Girl!"
screamed the raven.
"Girl! Girl!"
"Ty and Dan'l came on her 2 leagues south of Molestown. They were chasing down some wildlings who scampered off down the King's Road. Brought them back as well, but then they come on the girl. She's high-born, my lord, and she's been asking for you."
"How many with her?" He moved to the basin, splashed water on his face. God, but he was tired.
"None, my lord. She come alone. Her horse was dying under her. All skin and ribs it was, lame and lathered. They cut it loose and took the girl for questioning."
A grey girl on a dying horse. Melisandre's fires had not lied, it would seem. But what had become of Mance Rayder and his spearwives? "Where is the girl now?"
"Maester Aemon's chambers, my lord."
The men of Castle Black still called it that, though by now the old maester should be warm and safe in Oldtown.
"Girl was blue from the cold, shivering like all get-out, so Ty wanted Clydes to have a look at her."
"Oh, that's good." John felt 15 years old again. Little sister. He rose and donned his cloak. The snow was still falling as he crossed the yard with Molly. A golden dawn was breaking in the east, but behind Lady Melisandre's window in the King's Tower, a reddish light still flickered. Does she never sleep? What game are you playing, priestess? Did you have some other task for Mance? He wanted to believe it would be Arya. He wanted to see her face again, to smile at her and muss her hair, to tell her she was safe. She won't be safe, though. Winterfell is burned and broken, and there are no more safe places. He could not keep her here with him, no matter how much he might want to. The wall was no place for a woman, much less a girl of noble birth. Nor was he about to turn her over to Stannis or Melisandre. The king would only want to marry her to one of his own men, Hope or Massey or Godfrey Giant Slayer. And the guards alone knew what use the Red Woman might want to make of her. The best solution he could see would mean dispatching her to Eastwatch and asking Cotter Pike to put her on a ship
to some place across the sea, beyond the reach of all these quarrelsome kings. It would need to wait.